Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
This is the Ben Burnett Show, the only show in America that features a one-term has-been retired politician that nobody knows.
Welcome into the Ben Burnett Show. My name is Ben Burnett. I want to thank Evans General Contractors, Peachtree Government Relations, Chiringa, and everybody else who comes along this journey with me. My guest today is the Deputy Secretary of State, Jordan Fuchs. Jordan, welcome in.
Thank you, Ben, for having me. You have some great sponsors.
I hate to brag. First I want to start with, if you spell your name, I bet you've gotten some creative feedback or mispronunciations over time.
No, why would I get that? I obviously was born into the name. So it's actually German and it means fox. So in that context, it's really quite pretty. How you pronounce it is Fuchs. But I always see the look of horror when I start spelling it out for people because they're like, your last name is what?
Yeah. I'm sure.
So it's as I've aged, like it's really quite funny. It's a funny name. I hope to be married out of it at some point, but we'll see.
When you where did you grow up?
My dad was in the military, so we popped around.
Was mine.
Yeah, so you get it. We popped around for quite some time, and then we settled in to my mom's hometown in Tucker, Georgia. And so that's where I hearken from, and that's my hometown.
Where did you go to college, and what did you study?
Sure. I went to the University of Georgia, and I was actually a transfer student from GGC.
On 316.
Don Balfour created the four-year school that I ended up at for 2 years, and I worked full-time and put myself through college. And then I transferred to the University of Georgia and studied political science and public relations. And for a very long time, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I was one of those crazy kids that I was like, I want to be a political consultant. I want to do advertising for Republicans and run campaigns. And that I did that. That's what I did.
When you and so today you sit and I don't think well, the people on the inside will know, but you have run a Brad Raffensperger reelect.
Right.
And for those of you who give Governor Brian Kemp the bell cow title of largest margin of victory, it may not have been total vote-wise, but you guys actually had him beat on election day for outperforming your opponent.
Right. And there's a couple of things I would like to point out, which are really fun. I've never been able to say this about a campaign. So we did not put up a single yard sign, except there was one yard sign for a friend of mine.
He had a bunch of them the previous cycle.
In the previous cycle. Not a single yard sign in the state of Georgia, which was nice. We were outspent 7-1. I mean, the Democrats just threw everything they had at us, and the numbers didn't move in the polling, and so we didn't inject more money into the race. And that was interesting to watch. And then one of the things that I've always wanted to do is prioritize digital advertising over television, and we did that this time. And so I really enjoyed that. While Governor Kemp, I mean, he deserves everything that he, all the praise that he's getting. He ran a fantastic campaign. I really like the ROI on what we did. So the secretary did a good job. We had a great team, and not a single yard sign put up. It was fun.
Well, you don't just start in the Secretary of State's office in a highfalutin position and running a statewide race. We'll talk about some of the early races that you found yourself in and what interested you and what drew you to specific candidates. And how did you, you know, being an idealistic college student is one thing, like putting one foot in front of the other and actually having somebody entrust their life to you is quite another.
It's quite another. So I'm trying to think of the very first campaign I was a part of. I guess he wants no part of my coalition, but I ran some digital for Buddy Carter early on in my career. So Buddy Carter for Congress, his first race down in the first congressional district, Mark Roundtree and I ran that race together for Buddy. And that was an interesting race because that was in the middle of 2014 when there was this huge anti-incumbent movement. And Buddy Carter was every definition of an incumbent that you could find. And he still won.
Do we call that the Tea Party?
Yes. Yeah. And the Tea Party very much exists. I think the Trump coalition gobbled up the Tea Party almost entirely. So that's kind of what you see. So they've kept the theme of pushing back on incumbents and and pushing back on the establishment, which I think that is a balance in our party that I think is needed. It's a check and balance on people who are in power to make sure that they're doing the right thing for all constituencies. So anyway, so that was a race that Mark Roundtree and I ran together. And then there was a couple of judicial races that I ran, and State House, State Senate. Kay Kirkpatrick was another race.
Very widely respected.
Yes. And she is fantastic. Senator Kay Kirkpatrick ran her first race. And that was an interesting one to run because I was on the ground for that one, manually putting in the signs and working on the digital ads and working on the mailings and doing the whole shebang. So long story short, Landmark ran that race in the middle of Karen Handel. I mean, she was running at the same time. So that was a fun race to be a part of. Getting the party to be involved was like pulling teeth because they were very much focused on the shiny race, which was Karen Handel at the time.
I want to ask you about that because you and Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger and Mr. Sterling have carved out, I would say, probably the best bipartisan. Bipartisan is probably the wrong word. The margin speaks for itself on a reelect, right? And you're outspent 7-1, like you pointed out, and it didn't move the needle in polling. What are the issues that you see if you step out of that Secretary of State's office for a minute? What are the issues that you see? We talk about vision. I think that some of the issues that have plagued people like Herschel Walker are around the ability to cast a vision to lure people in. And I understand that being in the Secretary of State's office means that you're not the top of the ticket either.
No, we're not driving turnout. And I know that, which is great.
But on the same time, like whether you ask to become a household name or not, or the office, it did. But what are the issues that you see, you know, having run campaigns, having sat inside of the official constitutional office? What do you see are the things that will help grow the Republican Party? Because turnout in 2022 was slightly better than it was in 2018, but not a lot.
I think anyone who wants to be engaged in this process is actually engaged. I don't think that there are any Republicans, real Republicans, who are staying home, not voting. And that's true on the Democrat side as well. I think what we're seeing in the state of Georgia, and I've hinted at it in different other outlets, is that there is a fight for the middle, the swing vote, the people who they don't live and breathe the Democratic Party and they don't live and breathe the Republican Party. They are living normal lives.
Use their own brain.
And they're thinking through problems. And there's ways to identify who those individuals are. And what we started seeing is that if you messaged to them about crime, fiscal responsibility, things that have been a part of the Republican Party for a long time, not the crime part, the fighting crime, excuse me. These are all messages that we've heard our entire careers, right? In every campaign. Going back to those principles, appeal to a very broad audience and especially those swing voters. If I can touch on one other issue, is that in the November election, you saw across the state, election deniers did not fare well. They either
if at
they,
all.
At all, they did not win. From the left, it came from Stacey Abrams, and my team has done an excellent job of pushing back on her false narrative related to her saying the election was stolen from her. It was not. She then sued the state and the state election board in various counties. Her groups did, and their landmark piece of lawsuit was tossed out of the courts. And they did not win.
They didn't win any in the state of Georgia. I think they have one through in federal court, but I think it's only one.
I don't think it was even that.
You can tell me I'm wrong. I can make it up.
I'm not the attorney, and I don't pretend to be. But in terms of the federal case right before the general election, there was a blistering order that came out. I guess it was an order. That came out from one of the federal judges saying, where's the evidence? I mean, you're claiming, you're making all these wild claims about voter suppression. Where's the evidence? And they didn't produce a single voter that could say, yes, I was suppressed and the process left me out. Not a single voter.
Do you think that is, and look, we've seen, and the Republicans are plenty guilty of running to their battle stations over separate issues as well.
Right.
So we won't pretend to be entirely innocent either over some of the things that we like to talk about. But when you look at voter suppression, and I've said it as a right-leaning guy, I don't think there's a bigger charlatan than the one that says they don't want you to vote. They don't want you to vote. Like, I don't care. If you compete on ideas and you have the talent and the ability and the resources to do it, You usually don't lose. Not here.
17 days of early voting. No excuse absentee. If you want to register, you have the ability when you go to DDS to opt out of being registered to vote. It's not an opt-in option. It's an opt-out.
So if you get a driver's license here and you're 18.
Right. You're registered, buddy. And whether you like it or not, and some people really don't even know that that's an option. They're just kind of clicking through and whatever. So we have automatic voter registration, and then the counties have done an excellent job of making sure that they have adequate resources for voters. And that's the big piece to the voter suppression argument, that if you look at it, it completely falls apart. The counties that have the biggest issues running their elections, Fulton, DeKalb, I'll throw Chatham in there because I hear about Chatham all the time. Those counties are entirely run by Democrats, and those Democrats get to decide how many voting machines per location, the location allocation. Where are the locations? Are they on the south side of Fulton? Or are they north side of Fulton? They get to decide all these things, and they're in charge of hiring poll workers. They're in charge of fully staffing their elections divisions. So when it comes to suppression, where is it? Is it at the local level? And if it is, you need to hold your own counties accountable and their leadership if that is the case. And Stacey Abrams was never able to really do that. She just wanted this issue to blame Republicans. And the reality is that she lost in 2018, fair and square, and Governor Kemp won.
I have in that, I'll go super inside with you. The city of Milton is looking at taking over their elections from Fulton County, city, municipal.
They should, absolutely.
So, and I've been asked by several of them who are elected officials, and they're like, we feel like we overpay. And my response to all of them was, if you take it over and you don't do a great job, that is a problem I might be willing to overpay for to blame someone else. And that's an incredibly...
Oh, that's terrible.
I don't want the blame, but I kind of feel that way. Do you see more municipalities taking elections, local elections, and is that something over? And is that something that the Secretary of State's office thinks is probably a good idea as a local control Republican?
Right. So the Secretary, most people don't know this, but the Secretary of State's office has nothing to do with city elections. They're run on the local level. And so cities have the power and authority to decide how they're going to run their election. A lot of them decide to outsource it to the county. And
they pay for that.
And they pay for that. So if they don't feel like they're getting adequate services from Fulton, they should have the option to opt out. And that's my own personal belief, but I'm sure the Secretary of State might also believe that as well. When he was initially running for state house, he made the point to run on the issue of Milton County, which is removing north side of Fulton from the rest of Fulton County. And believe it or not, Milton County actually did exist at one point, way back when. So that is an issue I know that the secretary does believe in, and that if Fulton is failing in any particular way, there should be a separation.
When you look at the next 4 years as a senior, the most senior advisor in his, I won't call it administration, but administration, when you see the things that you guys want to tackle and go after, knowing that you have a lot more notoriety than your average Secretary of State, what do you think those issues are going to be in the upcoming cycle?
That was quite the statement. I think everybody at the Secretary of State's office just wants to keep their heads down and do their job and do good
and be anonymous
and do good work. And I think that's what the voters of Georgia are asking of us, is they want secure and fair and honest elections. They don't want partisans managing that process. Or what they're really saying is that it should be bipartisan, which is a sticking point that some Republicans truly hate. But that is not my job to mitigate. So I think for the next 4 years, one thing that I've learned since 2018 is that you cannot predict the future. There was no way to predict what was going to happen after 2020. I think if you had talked to our team in 2019, we thought the biggest thing that we would be known for would be implementing voting machines, and then we would call it a day. And
you were way off.
And I was way off. Now, moving forward, I think we do need to look at a couple of things, and specific to the runoff process. And I'm talking about the runoff, the general election runoff. One of the things that...
The December
runoff. There's no one on this planet that wants to deal with negative TV ads in the middle of their Thanksgiving. I don't. You don't. Judges don't want to read state law during that time period. That became very clear during the runoff. And county officials are having a difficult time recruiting poll workers.
Absolutely.
During that time period as well. So I think the General Assembly, and I believe the team feels this way, that the General Assembly needs to look at that general election runoff process. The key difference between 2018 and 2022 is this. We now have audits of elections, and those are good audits. We need those to make sure that the system is running properly and that there is a backstop. And it is hard for the election officials to do everything that they're doing and also plan a runoff and also run these audits. So I think the General Assembly needs to revisit that topic and eliminate the runoff process for the general election.
How do you feel like the odds? Because we're the unicorn as far as the country goes with respect to runoffs. Do you feel like there is bipartisan support? Because the guy who won the Senate seat in November, or had the greatest number of votes, won the runoff. Do you feel, and that's clearly not a partisan take, do you feel like there is a decent opportunity option for the state of Georgia to actually get rid of the December, whereas the case used to be January, runoff date? Is that something you guys feel good about, like across the aisle?
I don't have any polling on it, but I'm sure that it is a universal conversation that nobody wants to deal with politics in the middle of their holiday.
If you let the voters decide, it might be the first thing I've ever seen that was like 94% of people said this passed.
Exactly. I'm sure you can throw a rock out there and find some bipartisan support for it. So that's one thing I think the team will be focused on, and the General Assembly will have to decide what that runoff looks like. I don't think we're going to weigh in on the type of runoff that it needs to be, or how it ends up working. But
if it's plurality,
right. I don't think we're going to weigh in on that. And then there most likely will be a cleanup bill associated with elections. Not sure what that looks like, but it's usually administrative in nature.
So I want to ask you about the runoffs this time through, because certain counties voted on different days than other counties did. And I don't know that it won or lost somebody an election. I'm not smart enough to know that, but it seemed like the counties that had a really, really good population and a potential incentive to see higher voting days be there were ready, willing, and able to staff polls on, let's say, the first Saturday. Do you feel like something that you guys will have the opportunity to streamline, assuming that that is not the case with eliminating runoffs?
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's something that you guys can take to the bank to streamline those days in a cohesive way so that it is a known quantity amongst everybody who wants to turn out and
yes,
vote?
Yes, I think it needs to be equitable. And I think that's what the judges ended up basically saying is, yes, this is state law, but the General Assembly needs to clarify this particular issue, which is Saturday voting. And at the end of the day, the Secretary of State's office has to defend the laws on the books. We're not out here rogue looking for...
You're not inventing through executive order.
Right. You can't do that. So so we defended the law. I think that at the end of the day, it's going to be the General Assembly that makes that decision. And the courts are basically telling them, you have to clarify this. So that'll be interesting to watch as well.
I think you have an extraordinary responsibility that 4 years ago, I don't think any of us knew with regards to, not that we didn't think elections in this country were sacred, but it certainly has different visibility than it did a while back. But I want to ask you towards, when you get to 2020, and I don't want to go anywhere you don't want to go, but knowing that you lived in relative anonymity, how did you see your own life change? And what do you feel like you gave up, and what did you feel like wasn't fair?
Oh, well,
I gotcha.
You did get me.
In fairness, I feel like I told you I was going to ask you this.
Yeah, you did. You did. I'm still pretty numb to all of that and didn't have time to process everything that we went through in 2020. I think that I kept my head down and I did my job and I focused on what was important, which was pushing back on the disinformation that was created out of 2018 and 2020. So for the office, I think it was very clear that we were going to push back on election deniers, whether it came from the left or the right.
And whether that cost you an election down the road, you didn't have the ability to know. You guys just made the cohesive decision to sit there and, quote unquote, to use Brad's words, the right thing.
You got to do the right thing, which is, oddly enough, just looks like doing your job. And so at the end of the day, what did we lose? I think I gained more out of this process than people probably realize. I now know exactly who my friends are. I had worked at a political consulting firm for 6 years and dedicated my life to running campaigns for Republicans. And there was a very clear separation between that firm and
how you felt
my team.
Yeah.
And I think that was needed. The next thing that I think we gained was I had an interesting opportunity to rebuild my team completely in terms of the fundraiser, the TV guy, just the whole apparatus of the campaign I was able to rebuild. And from that, I have a team that will crawl through glass with me. They're not going to quit on me. They're not going to turn to the AJC and say whatever. It's a very good team, a loyal team, and that's what I got out of the 2020 election.
It is fascinating to get people like under, a layer or two deep, whose names you don't always know, that are kind of the nuts and bolts as to how the, tires roll forward. I think you guys did a tremendously courageous job, and I know that there are people on the right that give you an immense amount of hell, even still, and some always will.
Well, both sides do, and that's their job.
You took arrows from everywhere.
Right, but somewhere in the middle is exactly where the voters want you to be, which is they want elections to be safe, and they want them to be secure. And one of the best things that we got out of this whole process is photo ID associated with absentee ballots, so that the left and the right have sued on the issue of signature match, and now we have something that
they all agree on.
you have your photo ID, and notice that the left has completely dropped the argument about voter ID and suppression, because there are numerous case studies showing that that is not true. Coming out of MIT, Stanford, whatever it is, there are plenty of people that are saying photo ID strengthens security. Full stop. It's not suppressing anybody.
Right. Well, Jordan, I really appreciate the fact that you would come in here in your official capacity in the office and talk about your life and your experiences and what you do. It's just fascinating. My listeners will really enjoy, because you don't always get to understand the what gets you elected, and you know, and then you switch gears and have the official capacity. And I think that you guys deserve a tremendous amount of credit for, one, your margin of victory, two, your willingness to stick to your guns, even when everybody told you it wasn't popular. And I think that you are to be absolutely commended. And I saw Chuck Martin a couple of weeks ago, and we were just talking through, it was before the December runoff, and he said, I think, you know, he's like, I don't know him incredibly well, but he said, you got to think in 4 years. He's like, Brad Raffensperger might be the most bipartisan Republican that could do. I don't know that that would win him a general election in a governor's race, but he would certainly not have to tell people on the left who he was. And he got plenty of them to vote for him. So it's a huge compliment.
I think he's missing the point that we had Trumpers who were supporting us. We had we had swing voters who were supporting us, and we had some establishment Republicans support us as well. So there was a very broad base of support that I think people were kind of surprised existed. And the primary was incredibly telling that we won
four person race.
I am the first consultant on the team to deliver a runoff free win for Brad Raffensperger. So he's thrilled with that. But one thing I would like to point out is that the way I ran that campaign is the same way I've always run every campaign that I've been a part of, which is there's a singular message. Endorsements don't matter. The party infrastructure is not the one who decides who comes out of the primary, though they might say something else.
Yeah.
And again, endorsements don't matter. You got to know how to use them. And as far as I'm concerned, Jody Heiss's campaign had a 9-month leg up on our team, and we still won. And that's very telling. The voters knew exactly what was going on, and they didn't believe the lies.
Well, I give you all the credit in the world. Thank you for coming on. It's been another episode of the Ben Burnett Show. Have a great day, everybody.
Thank you.
Spring is here and baseball is back. You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at atlantaramjack.com.